You've heard the buzzword for years. Scale onboarding. CSMs shouldn't be doing training. Digital is a strategy, not a segment. But here's the truth. Most customer success teams are juggling a mess of tools, changing priorities, and have barely enough bandwidth to breathe, let alone scale. That vision we've all been chasing, it is finally real. Learning isn't trapped inside an LMS anymore. It's embedded across the entire customer journey. And that's where Skilljar, now part of Gainsight, is changing the game. Skilljar is becoming the backbone of scalable self-serve learning, whether it's in your academy, inside your product, in your community, or beyond. And because it's integrated with Gainsight's customer OS, it connects to where your customer data and your CSMs already live. This isn't theory, it is happening now. Companies like Airtable, Zendesk, Okta, Miro, and Asana are already doing it, with Skilljar and Gainsight leading the charge. So if you're ready to stop duct taping your customer education strategy together, visit Skilljar.com today. Hello and welcome to C-Lab, the customer education laboratory where we explore how to build customer education programs, experiment with new approaches, and exterminate all those myths and bad advice that you get. Because sometimes, you know, people are doing stuff, they're learning things, and they just want to share. We want to stop that problem and get our teams to grow. I'm Dave Darrington, and I am very thankful to have April Trash joining me. Say hello, April. It's good to see you.
How's it going? Happy to be here.
Yeah, we wanted to have you on this show. We've talked online before, I think on Working Out Loud, and we met in person earlier this year at SEDMA, which was a good opportunity to hang out.
I don't even know if that's our first time meeting. We probably met pre-COVID, but I feel post-COVID, that was the first time.
Post-COVID, for sure. We finally were getting back out again. All right, let's warm up. We've got a lot to talk about, a little bit of time. I went ahead and put some National Day Ofs today, as we always do, to warm up, get the brain going. What's your favorite today? This is kind of auspicious, I think. What do you think? From the options that we'd had. We have National Online Learning Day. I think that's appropriate because here we are doing everything online. We don't get to see people in person. And my backup was National Double Cheeseburger Day, which is the last thing I need for my diet. Oh, any thoughts about that? Online learning. I mean, we've made a big switch.
Actually, interestingly, I'm going to talk a lot today in our questions about the reversal for partner enablement. We do a more live and virtual live than ever before.
And live in person?
In person. I fly all over the place. I have never flown more.
Really?
Yes. I would say right now, and I'm hoping this changes, I'm probably a fourth of the time on business trips.
Good Lord. Well, you can get those frequent flyer miles racked up, I guess.
I know.
Right?
I know. Actually, the hotel that I go to in New York, the primary city for a lot of these events, they actually know me by name. So fast when I come in.
Hello, April. How are you today?
Mm-hmm. Like, you're back. Great. We have your exact room ready for you.
You know, that's great. I remember some occasions where I've had, it just feels good, doesn't it? You get to travel and people know you.
I mean, it's good to go somewhere where, you know, they know your specificity.
Yep. Everything's ready and waiting. Yeah, and they have all your clothes in the closet already.
They know not to leave the almond brittle for me. They always say, we've removed the almond brittle from your room.
Oh my gosh.
Great.
That's great. I'm having a sneeze here. Pardon me for just one moment. Why? I don't think that's happened on episode C-Lab before, so I'm going to have to cut that out. Sorry about that. All right. So I'm really thrilled to have you on the show, April, because we met up at SEDMA earlier this year. You're one of those folks that I know I look to when I have questions about partners and how do we interact, because it's so important on so many levels. So what I'd like to do is just connect you right now to the audience. Right now, you're at Rider. Rider is an AI company doing some really cool stuff. I've had the opportunity to learn about it. And I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation that we've been talking about having for a while, where we've got all of these dimensions of learning, right? Partner enablement is one of the really important ones that I know I've hit up against from the other side in customer ed. And what I would like to do is open up this space and have you share your knowledge and wisdom and experience more than anything too. To tell us, this audience, how do we connect? How do we connect the dots between each other and really partner up? Or if anything, if you're not working out there, audience, with anybody in partners, maybe you're the person that's actually doing it. What are some tips, tricks, things to talk about? What's your experiences? Ready to go? All good?
Yeah. And I would say for all the folks in customer education, even if you're doing some element of partner enablement, like sub-K partner enablement, understanding the perspective of your colleague over on partner enablement is really important to help understand how to share work, how to work together, how to collaborate effectively. I find that sometimes there is a little bit of siloing between GTM style enablement and what happens on the customer side. It's all good, just general context.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so real quick, before we really get into meaty questions, I wanted you to share out loud your career narrative, the things you've done. You've had some really cool highlights. I'm not going to steal your thunder on that, but can you go through a couple of those really formative things and maybe even dip back in your past, because I know you're a teacher too.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, those of you that have met me, I always say there's a woman, Obama's previous advisor, Valerie Jarrett, and she wrote a book in which she went from being a lawyer to into politics. And she called it the big swerve, like the big swerve in your life, the big swerve in your careers. And for me, I definitely had a big swerve. So I was an academic. I was very much an academic. My whole world was academia for more than a decade. And I moved from that into tech and into the enablement side. And I went right into customer education at Dropbox. And so I was in that kind of general customer education or enterprise customer education at that time. Not that it was a services team, but just that we were focused more on the enterprise motion.
Right.
So I originally went into just general customer education at Dropbox. And then I moved to the services or enterprise customer education at Slack. And at the time, that was when we were building Slack certified. So even though technically it was enterprise customer education, I always tell people, like, basically it was high stakes, legally defensible certification program that I worked with the curriculum and developed the curriculum for. And I both taught it and developed the virtual or the live and then the on-demand. For that initial program before Slack was acquired by Salesforce. And then I did leave Slack at that time. And for that program, we had strategic customers and then we had sub-K partners. Now, help me here for this podcast. One thing I would say is on the partner enablement side, there's a lot of acronyms. Like as you hear me talk, I mean, I'm saying sub-K, everyone knows probably what sub-K means. But as I move in, there's probably a lot of acronyms I might start throwing out. Please pause me.
Okay. Well, what is sub-K then? So I've
okay, see, there we go. See, it's perfect. So sub-K means when you're subcontracting services out to a partner organization. So if you look, I'll talk a lot about different types of partners today. There's lots of different types. And one specific type of partner engagement model, meaning how they engage with your company, what type of contract they sign with your company, is a sub-K partner. And a sub-K partner means that you're not a full GTM partner, meaning that you don't have a GTM business strategy that you've aligned with that consulting or system integrator, but that you have only signed a contract for them to deliver product services on your behalf. So that's typically the kind of partner that customer education will deal with, because they have the most overlap in terms of their motivation, their skill set, and who they are to a strategic customer, meaning that they need to know admin or developer or implementation style skills that are very product focused or best practice focused.
Okay, got you.
Yeah. So in the Slack certified program, we had some K partners and then we had strat customers. And that was my first exposure to partners. And I think, looking back, it's hilarious because I feel like I thought I knew what partners were. like, oh, those are partners. And even today, like I am continuing to constantly be challenged and grow and learn about what partnerships means and how a partnerships ecosystem works. So I initially started in sub-K and then I moved and I moved into owning kind of heading partner enablement. And I've now done that since. So I headed that originally at Cloudinary, which was a smaller developer-focused product for images and video manipulation and delivery. And then I went and owned the program at CrowdStrike, which is a really big difference because we're going from a small company of about 300 people with, I don't know if they're public, so somewhere between 100 and 200 million ARR, to CrowdStrike, which is 3.6 billion ARR with a 40% year-over-year growth, so in hypergrowth, with, you know, 9,000 employees, right? Mm-hmm. So it's different, a very different ecosystem. Again, this is all the importance. I'm not going to linger too long, but with Cloudinary, this was a company that was trying to become partner first, so trying to introduce a partner motion. So that means building totally from scratch. Whereas at CrowdStrike, it was already partner first, meaning that partners have to touch all of the revenue at the company. So that means partners are really, really important as a central mechanism and influence upon the success of the company. It was also a ground build. There was no partner enablement program, but partnerships wasn't new. Partnerships was very large and important. And from there, I moved to Writer. And it's also kind of back to that ground build where there was, you know, we're building the partnerships ecosystem, we're building the partnerships motion, and we're also building a partner enablement.
Wow. That's a good pedigree. And you've been in the trench, right? I really wanted to talk to you about this too, because this is that kind of journey that I think is important for us. We start somewhere, we find ourselves into a field, and I think you could switch either way. You could be customer education, digital success, but that live, what's really exciting right now is because at my place at Atlassian, I've bridged my career from I've done partner stuff too, but I've more than been in that camp of customer ed. And the thing that I wanted to get to is that I worked for a service provider. I've got their logo on my cup here, the Service Rocket Company, that got me a real interesting taste of being on the partner side. And now at Atlassian, where my team, and shout out to Andrew DeBell and Sarah that are on my team who lead the Atlassian Training Partners program. So we're in the thick of it. And, you know, I look to you for advice. I'm going to call you up and, hey, what about this? And how do we do this? We've got all kinds of things we can learn. So there's a connect. And before we get into some of the meaty stuff, just one really big question. So all of these companies you've worked at, these are interesting. And the programs that you've worked on, I love the get in and build it. It wasn't here. You've had that on the ground, boots on the ground kind of experience. And now you're a Writer where you're doing it again. Through all these companies, you know, what are a few lessons that you've learned that would carry forward today to where you're at? What was something that was really important through all those?
I think one thing I thought a lot about recently, because it's something that I'm continuing to be challenged by at Writer, is every time that you think you have it down or you have a playbook down or you feel like you know what you should be doing, you should never hold on tightly to it. And I know that that's like kind of a weird thing, but it's been my biggest challenge, because every time I think, okay, well, here's this thing that I built, or I know what this looks like, and this was successful in this previous environment. And then I reapply it, and sometimes it's successful, and then sometimes it's not. And I think it's really hard for me, and for, I think, all of us, to figure out where that line is of how do you double down and try to make something work because you have conviction around it being the successful and the best practice and the right way to do something. Mm-hmm. Versus how do you pivot, modify, potentially throw that out because a new environment it isn't conducive in. So I think that, and I know this sounds kind of vague, but that line to me is the one that I've continued to struggle with and the one that I've had to think the most about over my career. And there's moments where I've not done that effectively. Like I look back at some moments of my partner enablement leadership career, and I think I stuck too closely. Like I tried to be like, well, no, this is the right way. Like this is the way that research science tells us that we should do something. This is the way that is successful. Here's what cutting edge looks like. And I could have been more mindful of different types of approaches that maybe don't seem as ideal, but would have actually gotten me further.
Wow.
So anyways, that's kind of metaphorical, but I do think that a big shift in our industry right now, a lot of stuff is changing. right? And how we build enablement, how we deliver enablement, who our audience is, what their motivations are. I think there's a lot at shift, especially in the last like year and a half in tech. It's been a real change of our industry. And I think this plan that a lot of people had of like, okay, we're going to have our digital badge academy, and then we're going to have our, you know, select your own guided pathway through micro courses with gamified stuff. And then we're going to have the certification program that connects. And then we're going to have the virtual live that you sign up for. Like, all of like the regular approach that we think about, for me, has been very, very challenged. And I have to think a lot about like, what pieces of that do I want to double down on? Like, mm-hmm. what pieces are important to save? What should I die on the hill of? And then what things should I let go and be okay with letting go, which is super hard.
So what is that one thing out of all of that that's most important right now, at least?
I think that's, and I, here's the vulnerable truth is this is what I'm still trying to understand. I think for me, and this, I mean, I'm kind of jumping ahead, but when I came into Writer, I was like, okay, I know how to do this. Like, I know how to build from the ground up. I've done it. It's been successful. I'm going to do that. Like, here's the plan. Here's like the way that we think about this. You identify stakeholders, you start your influencing, your proselytizing, you align the different chess pieces on the board, so to speak, right? You get budget, you ask for the headcount to start building, you know, you have all these things. And there's, in partner enablement especially, much less so than other fields, but definitely in partner enablement, you have a very vicious pressure that's put on you around delivering now. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, you need to be building a scaled program. So you have these twin things of like, what are you doing right now? Because you are here for, like, the business rides on you. Yeah. Like, if you are not successful, the CEO is going to look at the revenue and it's going to land with you. And then also you want to build a scaled program. You want to bring in an LMS. You want to have a beautiful skin platform. You want to have self-guided, independent, on demand. You want to have a certification program. You want to have all these things that will make you successful in two to four years. And this is the balance I've struggled with, because for me, I'm like, okay, I think it should be 60-40. I think we should do 60 build, 40 keep the boat afloat.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of the path. And then over time, then this will maybe decrease to like 20, 30, right? Like, as mm-hmm. you grow and as you have more resources available for folks to be independent. For me, that balance is what has been the most challenged. I had to give up this completely for a little while. And that was incredibly uncomfortable for me.
Well, let me...
Because I know it's not the right path.
Yeah, let me back you up a minute.
We're getting
meaty. And actually, it connects into something that Adam and Dee on CX Cetera, I'll give that show a plug right now. I've been listening through that very intently. And one of the things that came up that both Adam and Dee had talked about, but Adam has been really assertive about this idea, is that the playbook concept is something that we increasingly need to identify, just as you have, April. You've articulated this really well. What got you here won't get you there is the other way that we sometimes say it in SaaS. And the speed, the velocity we're moving, the fact that we're under executive pressure, revenue pressure, all of these things together make for a very different situation than anybody could predict. So I'm saying that you're identifying again the same thing we're all identifying. Playbooks are not your friend. It's a model that you're always building and changing over time. And this is why we need a strong network with people that are diverse and have experiences and have done this over time, because where you're at now, again, this is why I really wanted to talk to you, is that you've learned that the hard way, some ways, but that's the only way to learn it, I think, because otherwise you go, I've done it too. I go, I'm going to come in and do all this stuff. And boom, then now I'm having problems and I'm struggling. And even being very vulnerable, I've had to hit that wall again and go, well, what I knew before doesn't work for me. Let's not forget about it. But let's start from scratch and ask the questions and do the hard work. So thanks for saying that out loud, because it's extremely important. You know, it's extremely important. And I'll leave it at that.
podcast today is also therapy for everyone listening. This is your therapy for the week.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's some good ones out there. Okay. So let's move on a little bit because we've got a lot of good stuff and we'll try to curate a little bit. We only have a certain amount of time. What I'd like to start this next section with is really, again, expand this concept of partner enablement, because to be frank, sometimes I've really struggled with this too, because I'm over here and then someone's over there. And a lot of the times I get I get stressed or frustrated because we're kind of doing the same thing, but we're really, in a lot of ways, not. So could you define or help expand our understanding of partner enablement and what it is that you have been doing and are doing now, or the big pillars to what you have to do to be successful?
Yes. So partner enablement, sometimes it's partner readiness. That's another kind of term that sometimes I'm in my title is that. It's for everyone. It is providing your partner ecosystem the tools, processes, and education to make them successful in the different ways that we work with those partners and they work with us, right? I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to set aside a little bit around tools and processes for this conversation just because of the audience. But I would just flag that when you think about what partner enablement is, it isn't just education or competency skill shift. It's also giving them tools and resources to work with us. So it's going to include things like the ability to deal register with us or have an easy pathway to work with us if they use our tool in terms of what we call MSP style engagements, which basically means that they are managing, operating our tool out of their own environment. So I'm not going to get really deeply into that, but there is processes, tools, and kind of structural pieces that we also need to provide partners for them to be successful. But outside of that, kind of focusing for this conversation on the education side, I think what makes partner enablement really challenging for folks and really everybody. Like I have teams, you know, I keep hiring folks onto my team, and for them, they really do truly have to learn the ecosystem. And even myself, it's taken me many years to learn this ecosystem. So I'm probably going to rattle off a number of things. And I think what was take from it is not necessarily like I need to know every single one of these, but just to understand the breadth, right, of kind of what we're doing and how your colleague on the partner enablement side might have to be balancing the different things that they're doing. So the challenge with making partners successful is our audience is incredibly diverse. And the way that they're working with us, their motivations, their business models, their skill sets, their contract models with us are all very different. So some partners may be doing a variety of things that are co-selling with us. Now that can look like different contract types, that could look like different things, but in reality, what they are doing is they're working with us to, in some capacity, co-sell. And I'm going to return to this group because they're probably the most important group in terms of enablement, one of the most important groups. Then the second thing that partners also do is they also will do general advising. So that means they're in the market and they are using their expertise to advise in an industry in which you're in. So they want to have a strategic relationship with you in order to understand your ISV so they can better advise. They're not necessarily co-selling. So this will be, for example, if anyone knows companies like McKinsey, McKinsey's a really good example of a company that's more on that like consulting side versus necessarily like a full co-sell. Deloitte will sometimes be like that, depending on what model they have as well. Then there's the third category of manage and operate. So these are partners that could also be doing one of these two other things. So I'm going to also caveat that unfortunately, partners don't just fit in these buckets. They might actually be doing two or three, five of these buckets, but just to understand in terms of enablement, manage and operate means that they are long-term managing and operating your tool. And the reason this is important is if you think about it from the enablement perspective, it basically means you have to enable these folks like a CSM. So it means you need to enable them to understand how to manage your tool, how to troubleshoot your tool, how to provide support, then also how to train, how to focus on things like retention, best practices, stickiness, adoption, right? That's what those people care about. If it's a tool like security, like for example, like CrowdStrike, that also might look like something like they're using your tool to do incident response, right? They might also, they're using your tool. Like it's a like a long-term use situation. Then another category is OEM partners. These are partners that have actually brought your tool into their own tool and white labeled it within their tool. So it means they need to understand and manage and operate your tool because it's part of their own technical stack. So it's a little bit different there because they're not necessarily focused on adoption or retention, but they are focused on the way your tool integrates and functions within their broader tool. Mm-hmm. Then there's the implementation and sub K partners. Those are the ones I mentioned earlier. Yeah. These are partners that are delivering very specific time-bound service engagements. So the service engagements can be anywhere from 3 weeks to 8 months. A year and a half could be a very long service engagement. And it can include technical implementation. It can include delivery and change management. It can include general consulting, systems thinking, organizational strategy. And it can also include training. So you might have a training partner like that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, like our Atlassian training partner program that we run.
Yeah. Our Atlassian training partner program. Then you have partners that are ISV GTM partners. So these are partners that you're working with. For example, Writer and Slack is a good example of a GTM ISV partner. So as a partner enablement person, when you look at all these different personas, you have to figure out what enablement each of these personas requires. What does this ISV require versus an implementation or a sub-K partner? Okay. I'm almost done.
Keep going. You are on a roll.
GTM partners. Then there is platform extensibility partners. So this means partners that are building integrations. They're building connectors or startups that are using your product in some way. There's some kind of platform extensibility that's happening. So there's always a relationship here with the product team. But these folks might be, there's extending. It's an extension in one way of a product. Then there's hyperscaler marketplace partners. So these are partners that you work with as hyperscalers, but you are selling via their marketplace. So for example, AWS Marketplace is really common. And as a partner enablement person, you have AWS reps that are actually selling your product. And so you have to enable those reps. So these are marketplace partners, if you think about it though.
Yeah.
And then the last one is you have infrastructure and data partners. So these are partners that your company works with in terms of infrastructure. They support your infrastructure, or you buy data storage with, or you're buying processing at the AI company. So of course, we've got a lot of data infrastructure partners. And then we have data connector partners, partners that might be sharing data or bringing data in to make our solutions effective. So you don't have to remember all of those, everyone, but
the key, pop quiz.
Yeah, there's no pop quiz. But the key to this is what you have to think about is each one of those partner segments, I'm responsible for them being effective. I'm responsible for them being able to do what they need to do with the company. And each of them have completely different motivations. They have completely different audiences, and they have different reasons for wanting to be successful with you and different reasons for needing certain kinds of enablement and engagement. So as a partner enablement professional, you have to look across this and you have to figure out where's the bleeding areas, like a battlefield. Where can structured, scaled enablement be most effective? Where does you have to have bespoke enablement? Where can the partner teams kind of handle it, if that makes sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Most places, just to give a tip for everyone, most places, the areas that you have to invest less time in, because those folks tend to have a lot of support already, OEM partners, ISV GTM partners, platform extensibility partners, and infrastructure partners do tend to be the ones that you can kind of put those on hold in some capacity, because you're probably going to be focusing most of your time on co-sell, advising, manage and operate, and marketplace partners.
This episode is brought to you by Parda.io. Parda is a next-generation authoring platform built for customer education. Okta, Bersanio, Miro, Writer, and many other fast-growing companies rely on Parda to stay in sync with product updates, build customer learning experiences, and manage content at scale. With Figma-style collaboration, granular branding, built-in localization, an AI assistant, seamless skill jar integration, and more, Parda lets you scale customer education the way it should be, fast, flexible, and collaborative. To learn more, check them out today at parda.io/clab. That's parda.io/celab. That is a lot. However, It mirrors a lot of different things. We're always talking about personas that we have to address in customer ed, and we kind of slide into that partner space because we have to share some material. But that expands this quite a lot, April. And now if you haven't interacted audience with folks in the partner segment, you may start to experience this as you go, because a lot of functions that I know I've been and you've been involved in, when they're small, they kind of emerge and thread out into different kinds of speciated roles, partners being one of them. But wow, that's a good, and that actually helps me resurface my thinking of the partners that we work with at Atlassian, because we've got literally all of those.
You have all of those.
Yeah.
Whoever runs your partner enablement has to be thinking across all of these. And it's one of the reasons why sometimes in some large companies, they're going to ask customer education to pick up Subkate partners, mm-hmm. because partner enablement, we are so overwhelmed. Like, it's so many needs in every direction. Mm-hmm. And because Subkate partners have a lot more overlap with like basic customer education, it isn't exactly the same, but there is like some way you can kind of serve those together. You'll see somebody get that picked up.
Yeah. And that's good, because it builds a connection between the two points, and you can start. And I really like to get in early and talk to my partner team, because it helps me, because a lot of the times the training that you may be doing, for example, could be pulled back into some other things. Commonly, I do a lot of scale, but it's different at Atlassian because we do a tremendous amount of instructor-led. Some quick rapid-fire questions then would be, well, what's unique about building for partners versus where we would be in a customer ed role or in your former roles? You're going directly to the customer, and you know, now we have an intermediary layer that's not us, who's helping also train or provide services.
Yeah. I think, again, it depends on the partner. So I'm going to like narrow it down to the one we care about often the most, which are solution partners, which includes all those partners that are doing services and solutions. And I would say, even narrowing it further, I think the number one difference, like what's unique, is their motivation. Especially partners that are doing co-selling, advising, manage, and operating, but I'm going to kind of focus as well specifically on co-selling and advising. Huh? They are working with all of your competitors. So it's you and all of your competitors, and you are not, like, you are important to them in the way that you can serve their own unique business strategy and their own go-to-market. So the key, I think people very often think about partners as your external sales force, like not Salesforce, the company.
That's easy to think about, right?
Yeah, like your internal sales, external sales team. Like, partners are not there to sell your company. Like, they are not there to sell Writer. Now, if you get to a very large company where you have really, really lucrative services that are very well established, so that might be Salesforce, maybe Atlassian, probably something like Okta, CrowdStrike, you will have some partners where they have built a services motion specifically around your tool, and they are kind of going to market in that capacity. But that's pretty rare. And even then, they're still working with your competitors, and they are building their own differentiated package that's going into market. The question is, are you going to be part of that package? And so when you enable them, you can't be like, how do you do well on, like, how do you use Writer? Like, they don't care about that. And in fact, like, just to give a really illustrative, extreme example, I was asked by a partner at a nameless company in my career. Nameless partner, nameless company. I was doing a custom enablement, and it was like a co-selling motion. And the managing director of the service practice who I was working with looked at my plan for mm-hmm. the enablement. He said, you know what? It would be really great if you just didn't really talk about your tool. It'd be great if you just didn't mention it at all.
Oh, okay.
Right? And this gives you such a perspective. If you're in customer education, their job, like, one of their motivations is to understand your tool so that they can better do their job. right? Like they have purchased Slack. So like there is a motivation for them to understand how to use Slack in order to be effective. So you can like grab that intrinsic motivation that they want to understand your tool. At least they're curious about how your tool can help. Whereas with a partner, they're thinking, I care about you as far as I can throw you and as far as I can make money off of you. And you should come in and convince me why how you will help me in my thing. Mm-hmm. So you need to understand my thing and fit yourself as a possibility within it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's a very oblique way of, it's harder for someone who's coming from customer ed to grok that.
Totally.
Because you're scaling through others. You're using others as a leverage, but they have to have a motivation to do their work.
They're their own business. So like, and I'm going to bring this to AI. So AI is a really wild field right now.
Right.
And all of the large consultancies and system integrators. So mm-hmm. we call it GSI. So if you hear me say this word, GSI stands for Global System Integrator. And that's going to be these very, very large octopus global companies that really monopolize the consulting and integrative market for the world's largest companies. So for example, if you're at Goldman Sachs, you've probably worked with the same GSI for 2 decades. And you're working with this GSI, you have a deep relationship with them, but you are always getting competed. You're getting competing GSIs trying to work with you. Yeah. Okay, so all the GSIs are competing with each other to maintain their relationships or steal other people's relationships, if that makes sense, right?
It does,
so
yeah.
If you're Goldman Sachs, let's say you've worked with, again, this isn't makeup. Let's say you've worked with Deloitte for a very long time in this part of your business. You might also have Slalom that's coming in and being like, here's how I can transform your AI. And here's the expertise I have. And here's the change management. And here's the special internal tools I have at Slalom. And here's the team I'm going to give you. And also, hey, P.S., I also have deep relationships with these vendors and I could tell you exactly how to implement these different ones for this exact ROI. So my job is to come in, let's say I work with Slalom. My job is to go into Slalom and say, here's how you use Writer, but here's how Writer could fit within this package that you are taking outbound. Mm-hmm. This is like Goldman Sachs.
Okay. You're doing a wonderful job segging into these topics and fluidly merging them. So I want to talk about this briefly, but then there's some other meaty questions we want to get to before we have to drop on the call.
Told you I'm verbose.
You know, you're on point, and this is really exciting to hear about it. So now you're a writer. Now from what I know and what I've learned about Writer so far, and I did some homework over, I'm interested. It's really a neat platform, and the AI has exploded. I don't want to steal your thunder. So knowing that AI is such a hot topic, now you're working with that exact kind of setup you just said, right? You're working with big company. How are you thinking about enabling partners and customers in this world of, well, you've got a tool for it. And what's coming, what's emerging out of that? How is this working for people? Because we're doing AI every day. I'm using it every single day in all kinds of things. I'm helping educate people about it. That's one of our big jobs here at Atlassian as well, is Rovo. We have our flavor of it, but there are all these different tools out there that do different things. So tell me more about what you're doing now, a little about the tool, and then we'll bridge on to some other questions as well.
What I'm doing in terms of the like enable.
Yeah. How are you approaching AI and thinking about it and working with enabling these partners? Because this is a complex platform. It's a complex tool.
Yeah.
What is it?
Yeah, how are you? Let me give some context to everyone kind of on the Writer. So Writer is a generative AI platform. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think what's different about Writer versus the ones that you're probably more familiar with is two main things. One is if we had to divide everything into kind of buy and build, meaning that piece together a stack mm-hmm. or build stack, we're a full stack solution, right? So we're not about piecing together different tools. We offer kind of zero to hero for the solution. The second thing that makes us unique is we're enterprise only. We are mm-hmm. an enterprise generative AI platform. And that's probably one of the reasons why you, like, you know, Sarah, whatever isn't going to know less about Writer than they are about, say, ChatGPT or something like that, because those tools have consumer foci. Like, there's a consumer focus to what they offer. They have consumer products. Like, you can use ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. A Writer, by contrast, from the origin to where it is now, it is entirely enterprise focused. And so that means that our LLM family, LLM is large language models. Those are things like Claude, ChatGPT, Gemini. Our language model, which is the Palmyra family, are focused entirely for enterprise use cases. And that's kind of how they've been built, how they're trained, how they function. For the purposes of this podcast, I won't necessarily go into what that means. Unless someone wants to reach out to me, feel free. I can kind of explain what makes an LLM more enterprise focused than a more general purpose LLM. Right. So in addition to LLMs, we also have a way to ingest business data into the LLM. It's what's called a graph-based RAG. But it's our proprietary way of bringing that data in a meaningful way to the LLM. And then on top of that, we have basically workflow orchestration, meaning that we have a way for you to do multi-system, multi-tool, multi-agent orchestration and synchronization of business processes. And we do this for very deep mission-critical workflows. So again, like, to kind of point to Writer, Writer is less focused on, say, like, automating your Instacart order, which is very cool. Very cool. We're more focused on, like, how do we do S1s at financial institutions like Goldman Sachs? It's kind of a different focus. And what I would say is, on the enablement side, what makes this really fun about working at Writer is, one, we have a very expensive enterprise tool that we get to use, which is really neat, right? Like, I won't say the base price of AI tools, but, like, you know, like, you could, you know, buy a house in the Bay Area, you know, for, of course, whatever.
Yeah.
House of these tools. So the neat thing is, like, you can kind of think about, how do you use AI in the surface, in the learner surface? I think there's two different places you can use AI. One, you can use it on the back end, which is kind of what you're talking about, like, for development, design, basically workflow optimization as a learning professional, as a learning team. And then you can also use it to think about, how is that going to impact the learner experience? So I know a lot of companies are doing this around search, right? Federated search. You can use AI to, like, search within different parts of a LMS, or within a learning tool, or within SCORM packages, or things like that. On my side, what I think is very interesting is being able to actually build what's called custom KGs. Those are knowledge graphs, but basically custom collections of data, and then hooking up a built workflow with an embedded front end that allows the user to ask questions or even generate things that they need. So there's two different options. One would be like a chatbot function, right? Where you could potentially ask questions and it's going to surface it from a selected compilation of material you give to the LLM. And the other option would be to use our workflow tools, where we have a customizable front end. Is, imagine this, like, if you're a co-sell partner and you wanted to come in and you wanted to say, like, you know, I'm kind of interested in building what's the competitive differentiation in this particular area? Like, I'm selling into financial analysts. I'm selling into a service practice that focuses on financial analysts. And I want to propose a solution that's going to achieve this problem, this problem, and this problem. Well, we could potentially build an agent, depends on what word you want to use, app or an agent, that could actually pull data from different sources, or it could be a singular data, and you could put things into it and it's going to spit something out for you that would be like a working item for the learner. So I can't get too in depth also, because I have to be mindful of competitive stuff.
Of course, but you framed it pretty well.
In general, like, you can think about the ways in which you can build this if you have a structured app building tool versus just an LLM.
Well, it sounds like there's a tremendous amount of kind of platform agnostic work to do for enablement, but then it sounds like you're going meta and you're using the platform itself to help do the training and get outputs for that. Are you using any LMS platforms or tools to help that, you know, delivery? Where what kind of tooling do you do for your training program?
Yeah. And, you know, I know there's a lot of like conversation. I was talking to someone recently that's like, I think the LMS is going to go out of business and it's just going to be an LLM or something like that on the front end. I have feelings about all of that. I think that we do track certain things in meaningful ways with data with an LMS. I have a new program, so we're launching an LMS. So we are doing that. Like the tradition, like there are, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. There are structural delivery items that you can do that. But within those, if you have a tool like Writer, you can actually build these custom apps and embed them into your learning surfaces.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Like if you like have
your application, the website, the anywhere, your community, anywhere that you go.
Right. So if you have a surface, we on our tool, we have an iframable embed, right? Like nice. It's a Python embed. So you can basically go into a surface, and as that surface allows you to do so, you can embed an AI experience within those surfaces.
Got it.
If you have a tool like Writer, that's going to be different if you're just using a tool that's just an LMS, or excuse me, just an LLM.
Right. Right.
Right. You've that's going to be, you're going to have to do custom engineering build. And that's very hard for an education team to get both the resources to do the custom build and then the maintenance, which is a difference between a buy and a build, right? Because with a build, you're going to have a lot of maintenance and you have to deal with IT, which means like IT tickets. So that might not be super feasible. So it's probably easier to do something like a chat function if you're engaging with learners.
Yeah. Okay. We're almost out of time. So what I'm going to do is ask you one more question, let you sign off, and then I'll continue to log out and or to do the outro. You can be best found on LinkedIn if people want to reach out to you and talk to you.
Yeah. I'm like looking at my LinkedIn. It's just April Trask.
April Trask. Cool. Yeah, April Trask. I really want to talk to you a lot more about this. Maybe there should be a part two sometime. But let me ask you one more question. This is your time to shine. I think one of the juicy ones that we wanted to get into was about collaboration, right? I know you're like me, you've got all these other teams that you're partnering with internally and externally. Let's talk about customer success, marketing, product, or even customer education. So can you exposition about that just a little bit as we've got 2 minutes left on my mic?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly think it's really similar to customer education, where you have to have really deep relationships with product marketing, product, and then for me, sales enablement, customer education, marketing, customer marketing. And if you have like a customer marketing team, community, if you have a community team that's separate from your customer education team. And I think all of these are super, super critical. If I had to say like the number Chen and the most important connection point for me is always product and product marketing. Because in AI, our product is changing pretty much every week without a delivery schedule.
That's what we live in.
Yeah. So I think in a lot of ways, that's one of the areas of similarity is who our cross-functional partners are. I would say one of the only differences is I probably engage more with sales enablement than say a customer education team.
Well, it makes sense because that's in that whole, if your partners are selling, then you really need to be locked in with them because they have to understand pretty much what you, your salespeople would, and you're passing that through. You know, it's complicated. All right. Any final parting words, recommendations, advice as we walk out the door?
Yeah, I would say like, if you want to go into the field, it's definitely very different than customer education. And I think one of the differences is the different types of pressures that you have around pipeline and revenue. That's probably one of a little bit of the differences. Yeah, okay. But what I would say for everyone who just kind of works with partner enablement, or they work with pieces of it, or they work with partner enablement leads, I think the number one thing is to just ask lots of questions about what their priorities and North Stars are, because I think that will help you align to them and help you understand what metrics they're trying to hit versus your metrics.
Fantastic. This has been great. April, thank you so much for taking me up on the invitation. I'd like to talk to you more in the future. So maybe there'll be a part two sometime. I think we can talk all day. So I'll let you head out. Make sure you reach out to April if you have any questions. She's a person I go to every time I talk about partner enablement. So thank you again.
I what I would always say is it's a field that always makes you challenged. Like you will, I never feel like, I always feel like I'm learning. I never feel like I know enough. So feel free to reach out. We can probably brainstorm together and really appreciate joining this podcast. It's been one that I've been following for a long time.
Yay. Well, we're a follower of you too. So April, it's been fantastic. Thank you so much. We know where to find you and we'll ask questions more. So our usual outro, if you want to learn more, we have our podcast website at customer.education. Find our show notes and other material. We're also part of the customer education community at large. And I would say our partner enablement, another sales enablement. We're friends to everybody and we're expanding our remit. So we're here to learn, share, and get people spotlighted about the great work they're doing. So also, finally, special thanks to Alan Cota for our amazing theme music. Alan, you do a great job. And if this helps you out, you can help us out by subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, all the podcatchers of choice. Really helps us if you leave a positive review because, hey, we're trying to reach your friends. Help us grow our audience. Get out there, educate, and experiment, right? And find your people. Thanks, everybody.